Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and along with me, as always, is Sai Prakash, the co-host of this program. We move on in our discussion of Chapter 19 of Prema Vahini. In the previous episode, we discussed the first segment of Chapter 19. Just to remind our listeners, these segments are done by us for the ease of breaking the chapter into different parts and for helping us to assimilate it in smaller dosages. So that is the purpose of the segmentation, and we have divided the chapter 19 into two parts. In the previous episode, I played for you the first part and then we had the discussion. If you are referring to the Telugu Prema Vahini, Bhagwan's original writing, in fact, if you can understand Telugu, if you can read Telugu, there is nothing better than reading the message of Bhagwan written in Telugu, because it is as pure and as clear as it can be. We do a retranslation of what Bhagwan has written in Telugu, but you know, Indian languages are so unique. English can never really do justice in translating work of Indian languages, and especially where there is Sanskrit. And Bhagwan's Telugu has a lot of Sanskrit in it. So there are limitations of translating Bhagwan's work into English. Nevertheless, this is the language that all of us are familiar with, and we have to deliberate in this language. But if you know Telugu, then definitely you should read Prema Vahini in Telugu, and this is chapter 6 in Telugu Prema Vahini. So let's move on. I'll now play for you the second segment of chapter 19, and then we'll pray to Bhagwan to guide our thoughts.
Parama vastuvunu abhilashinchi pondavalayu nannacho bhaktunaku itti manastattvamu abbavalainu appudu sukadukkamula lekka cheyaka ఆత్మతృప్తికై ప్రాకులాడక తీవ్రంగా నిరాటంకంగా నిస్సందేహంగా సాధన చేసి సత్యవస్తువులను గ్రహించిన పిమ్మట పరిపూర్ణ తృప్తి భక్తునకు కలుగును. ఈ వివరమును పట్టి చూడ జీవన్ముక్తునకు భక్తునకు భేదము లేదనియు అట్టివారు అహంకారమునకు త్రిగుణ రూపమైన ప్రకృతికి వర్ణాశ్రమ ధర్మములకును అతీతులై ఉందిరనటయు స్పష్టపడును. అట్టివారి హృదయం దయాపూరితమును లోకోపకారయుతమును అయి ఉండును. వారి బ్రహ్మానందమే వారిని అట్లు చేయును. ఇట్టి భక్తునకు కోరికలే ఉండవు. ఎట్లన అహంకార మమకారములు నశించిన కదా భక్తుడు. కావున అట్టివాని హృదయమున కోరికలకు చోటే లేదు. అతడు అమృత స్వరూపుడైన భక్తుడు. అమృత స్వరూపమునకు ఆనంద మాధుర్యము తప్ప వేరెట్టి రుచులు కానరావు, నిలువలేవు.
If you aspire for the ultimate, you should cultivate such a mindset. Then, unmindful of pains and pleasures, not hankering for one's own satisfactions, and proceeding on the path of sadhana firmly, uninterruptedly and with conviction, one can attain the principle of truth and be blessed with complete contentment. If you look at all this, there is no difference between a devotee and a self-realized soul. It will become clearer that both are beyond the ego, the three attributes of prakriti or nature, and the varnashrama dharma or the obligations of worldly life. Their hearts are full of compassion and are engaged in the service of fellow men. They are what they are because of their bliss. Such devotees do not have any desires because they have eliminated ego and attachment. Only after they are uprooted, a person becomes a bhakta. Desire finds no place in their heart. Such a person is an embodiment of immortality. In them, you can see nothing other than the sweetness of bliss, nor can anything else stick to them.
So Bhagwan is, you know, there are very, very powerful sentences in this segment. No, Swami says that only when ego and attachment is uprooted, you become a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that is something very, very powerful, in the sense that, you know, most of the time we call ourselves devotees, but Swami is clearly saying, if you say that you are a devotee, then only when ego and attachment has been uprooted, you then qualify to be a devotee. And if you see, there are 2-3 central ideas that Bhagavan is conveying here. You have to go beyond ego. You have to go beyond the gunas. You have to go beyond the varnashrama dharma. And that is what a devotee should be. That is what a devotee, and in fact, I mean, what is a devotee if a devotee does not march towards the goal of self-realization? And the way is, you have to give up ego, you have to go beyond the gunas, and then Swami says finally that you have to be ever engaged in service. Of course, the central idea in this segment is that you have to give up ego and attachment, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that is more of a manifestation of who a devotee truly is.
Mm.
It looks like this segment has two parts to it.
Yes.
And everything that you said just now, which comes in the latter paragraph.
Yes.
Swami is more or less saying that a bhakta is qualified by the attributes of not having ahankara and mamakara. But then in the first paragraph, there are a list of things which Swami has said that the bhakta has to do in order to get there.
Yes.
I mean, after you become a bhakta, quote unquote bhakta, then you will be characterized by these attributes of no ahankara and no mamakara and all that. But there are ways to get there.
Mm.
And the first line of this whole segment is a sort of continuation from what we left off last time.
Yes.
Because the last paragraph ended with the prayer of Mother Kunti.
Yes.
And
Lord, please shower me with more pains.
Yeah, so Mother Kunti prayed that let us have always, O Jagatguru, distress and misery, if only you grant us your darshan, the darshan which destroys rebirth.
Absolutely.
So, Mother Kunti is praying for problems and misery so that she can think of the Lord all the time.
All the time.
And she can have the Lord's darshan. Now, it's very interesting because in whenever you talk about bhakti and you talk about devotion, you cannot escape mentioning the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
Because the bhakti yoga, which Swami has, touched upon on several occasions in several discourses, and the entire series of discourses that Swami gave in 1984, the Bhagavad 32 discourses on the Bhagavad Gita, I think they are absolutely priceless. And
in fact, you know, as you're mentioning this, I'm just reminded of an anecdote. This was the time when Bhagwan, for one Janmashtami, was in Prashantinilayam, and Professor Nanjundaya was at that time in Vrindavan, and the Swami had given him permission to come to Prashantinilayam for the festival. And so in those days, you know, when Swami used to be in Vrindavan, he had close proximity of Bhagwan. Swami used to give him a lot of attention. You know, they were the sort of the teachers who set up the Vrindavan college. And so Professor Nanjundaya was definitely very happy that, you know, Swami has given him permission to come for the festival, and not many were given, you know, it was like just 2-3 people Swami had given permission. And so he was he started off in the morning, and you know, he was bringing a basket of fruits and flowers and all that for Swami. And in those days, you know, you had to come via Bukkapatnam and all that, and so there was actually flood in the river. Chitravati was overflowing, so it took a long time for him to come. And nevertheless, but the problem was, by the time he came, the festival was over. I mean, the celebration in Mandir was over, but he wanted to have Swami's darshan. So he sent word to the boy, you know, looking after Bhagwan's room, if he can have darshan. And Swami allowed him. He said, yes. Swami said, no, let him come. So he went to Swami's presence. And there, I think Swami Karunyananda also was there.
Okay.
With Bhagwan. And Pastor Ranjana was so happy, you know. Swami is giving this special darshan on this day. And and as soon as he came, you know, he was about to say that, you know, his journey got delayed because of this. And Karunananda himself said, oh, so there was real, so the water was overflowing, so he had to come this way and then this way and then so he had to come. He said, oh my God, how do you know? So apparently Swami was giving a running commentary to Karunananda of the journey of Professor Nanjundaya. So Nanjundaya then thought, you know, Swami is constantly thinking of me, you know. I mean, what other greater blessing that you can have? And, you know, and so he immediately said, Swami, can I garland you, Swami? You know, he had brought the flower. Swami said, yeah, very much, why not? And so he garlanded Swami. And, you know, then he had bought some fruits. And then he thought, you know, generally if you would get fruits, you know, he would give it to the boy who looks after the kitchen, you know. But that day he was so much overflowing with devotion and the way Swami was responding. And, you know, he thought, you know, why not offer the fruit at Swami's feet itself? And he said, Swami, can I place the fruits on your feet? And Swami said, okay,
place it.
Place it. And, you know, now that Bhagwan was extremely pleased with him, he thought, you know, I mean, this is the opportune moment to get it certified from Bhagwan. So he got up and he said, Swami, if I have devotion, that is enough, isn't it, Swami? Do I really need anything else? And Swami immediately stopped. He went back on the chair and Swami said, if you have a devotion of this kind, it is a headache for me and it's a burden for you.
My God. Full stop.
Full stop. I said, if you want to know what is devotion, go and read the Bhagavad Gita.
Wow.
If you want to know what is bhakti, all this is show.
All this is show. In fact, see, the thing is, here Mother Kunti is praying, Lord, give us difficulties, give me. But, you know, sometimes just regular life itself, we want to stop everything, we want to go and keep looking at Swami, thinking about Swami, doing Swami's. But, you know, daily routine, you do this, why do I have to do this, why do I have to do that? Some people get that kind of a feeling. And so, if for that, what Swami says is, you know, think that you are doing all actions as an offering to me.
Yes.
In fact, in chapter 12, he says, Mayeva mana adastva may buddhim niveshaya nivesishyasi mayeva ato urdvam na samshaya. Always think of me.
Yes.
Whatever you do it for me. You know, there is a beautiful story which Mrs. Ratanlal auntie had told. So she was the one who was cooking food regularly for Bhagwan. For several decades, auntie was doing that. And one of those days, when Swami had come to her house in Vrindavan, on the other side of Swami's residence, was her cottage. And Swami would often drop in there. And so one of those days when Swami had gone there, she came and she held Swami's feet and she said, Swami, she started crying. She was very upset and she started crying. And Swami said, kya ho gaya pagal, why are you crying? Why are you crying like this? And she said, Swami, you are giving so many darshans to so many other people. You are giving divine experiences. You are giving Jyotir darshan, you are giving Shiva darshan, Vishnu darshan, Devi darshan, so many visions and everything you are giving to everybody. But you are not giving me anything.
I am only cooking.
You are not giving me anything. Then Swami said, hey, what are you doing? She said, Swami, I am cooking. For whom are you cooking? She said, Swami, for you. And Swami said, what more do you want?
What more do you want?
What more do you want? Yes. You're doing this action for me.
Yes.
And then Swami told her, take namaskar. Now, this is the most beautiful part of the whole episode where she says, oh, okay, Swami is not going to give me any darshan. And she takes Swami's pad namaskar. Now, as she is getting up, Swami just puts his hand on her head, just one tap on his head. The moment he touches her, the entire anguish, that pain, that, you know, that feeling of why I'm not having it, that anguish, that pain, whatever, that heaviness in the throat vanished.
Wow.
In one split second, it was all gone.
All gone.
And she said even if she tried to feel sad, she could not feel sad. Means in one second, he just sucked out that emotion. That entire emotion was just removed.
Wow. And filled with peace.
And filled with
Swami Bhagwan. Says the true test of bhakti is the shanti.
Is the shanti. Exactly. Exactly. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita series of discourses, it's very, very beautiful. For people who have not heard it, I'm sure they should read the Bhagavad Gita discourses that Swami is giving, because he's brought it down to such simple terms, and he says exactly this. Peace and happiness.
Yes.
That is the mark of a true bhakta. And what? How do you identify peace and happiness? So, you know, looking at this, so that was the first point that Swami addressed. And after that, there is a very, very interesting statement, which has some 3-4 things that a bhakta should do. Then he says, then regardless of joy and sorrow, without any worry about one's own satisfaction, he will engage himself in sadhana firmly, uninterruptedly, and with conviction, and after understanding the reality, he will have full contentment. So that one sentence has so many things. I did a little bit of research here.
Oh, okay.
And ever since, you know, if you have read the Bhagavad Gita or you have heard Swami speaking about the Bhagavad Gita, and since this line came here again, I said, no, this is the time to actually do a little bit of research, because he says, regardless of joy and sorrow, and even in his letter to his brother Sesham Raju, Swami said, I have my own definition of who a bhakta is.
Yes.
The one who treats happiness and sorrow with equanimity.
Yes.
So, in my understanding, that is one of the most recurring topics in the Bhagavad Gita. Equanimity between happiness and sorrow. This Krishna has told so many times in the Bhagavad Gita. So I went back to the Bhagavad Gita and tried to do a research on how many times Krishna has actually mentioned this equanimity.
So it's not only in the 12th chapter.
No. You will be surprised. I'll tell you. Chapter 2, Shloka 38, 45, 48 and 56.
He's
talking. In Shloka 38, is Sukha Dukke Samikritva Labo Labo Jaya Jaya, that one. Then in Shloka 48, he says Samatvam Yoga Mucchate. Then 56, so there are Dukke Shvanu Dvignamana Sukke Shuheta Spruha Vita Ragavaya Krodha Sukha. So Dukke Shvanu Dvignamana, one who is not, bogged down by Dukkha, or one who is not elated by Sukha. So this recurring topic, wow. In chapter 2, it comes Shloka 38, 45, 48, 56. Chapter 3, Shloka 22. Chapter 4, Shloka 3 and 25. Chapter 6, Shloka 7 and 9. Chapter 7, Shloka 28. Chapter 12, in Shloka 13, 15, 17, 18, 19.
Oh my God.
Chapter 14, Shloka 24 and 25. And Chapter 15, Shloka 5.
Oh my God.
I actually went through and I just realized that this topic of equanimity of joy and sorrow has been emphasized so many times in the Bhagavad Gita. And, maybe we should look at it from 2-3 different angles, why it is so important. This whole issue about equanimity between joy and sorrow. Like we all know that Swami used to say, what is this sorrow? What is this sadness?
I don't know what it is.
I don't know. How does it feel? How does it? Because he's always in bliss. He's in ananda. He's not touched by this duality of...
Nothing else can stick to him, as Swami says here.
Yeah, nothing. So, in fact, we used to sing that song, Oma, Oma. Main roya, tu roya. Swami said, no, no, no. I never cry. So, I was like, trying to figure out what it actually means. And I tried to read this book, the Bhagavad Gita Discourses from 1984. And my one line of thought which came, of course, nothing can be absolutely comprehensive. Of course, one way of looking at it is whatever happens to me is God's will.
Yes.
Happiness and sorrow, and nothing is, it's all temporary. It comes and goes, comes and goes.
Everything is prasadam.
Everything is prasadam. You accept everything as God's prasadam, and that is, but if you want to go a little bit more and try to understand what it is, there is a very interesting angle which Swami has told. Mm-hmm. So like for example, he says, we have this whole world around us, and we have this sun, we have the moon, we have the planet, we all, everybody is living, everything. But he says, all this which is perceived by the senses and which is interpreted by the mind. So where there is a play of the senses and the mind, this is called Bhutakasha. So Bhutakasha. So he says Bhutakasha is what you see, you feel through the senses, through the mind, and that is where what you experience when you're in the state of, when you're awake. See, now for example,
so the physical awareness.
Yeah, it's a gross state.
Yes.
So he says that that Bhutakasha, which you see, this entire, he says, Surya Mandalam, Chandra Mandalam, Nakshatra Mandalam, millions, and we know, millions and billions of light years, and the vast expanse of the universe. Nobody knows how big the actual universe is.
Yes.
They say that they are still trying to see the extent of the visible universe.
Yes.
So, it's ever expanding universe. But the beautiful part is, he says, this entire Bhutakasha is one small dot in Chittakasha.
Chittakasha. Amazing.
So, that Chittakasha, which is actually ruled by the mind.
Yes.
So, he says, the mind is what is experiencing this level of Chittakasha. So, then again, Swami says, how do you experience that in daily life? So, when you are asleep, he says, when you are awake, that is Bhutakasha. You you are seeing, your senses and your mind are active. When you are asleep, your senses are asleep. Your senses are not active, but your mind is active.
Yes, your that's mind, how dreams happen.
That's how you get dreams. And he says, your mind is active, and in the dream world, there is no logic, there is no time, there is no kala, karana, kartavya, nothing is there.
Yes.
So, you are here 1 second here, next second you are in the US, third second you are somewhere else. And in this Bhagavad Gita series, Swami also says very beautifully, he says, now I am giving this discourse, all of you are sitting in front of me and you are listening. Now, when you go back home, you just close your eyes and then you can picture me, that is Chittakasha. When you go home, you can picture Swami sitting.
I mean, you can recreate it.
You can recreate it in
your mind's eye.
Yeah. Instantly you can recreate it in your mind's eye. That is how powerful Chittakasha is.
Yes.
So he says,
I mean, we have to spend thousands of dollars to go to Australia. The mind can just go in a second and come
instant,
back.
Instant. Instant. And so he asks, actually even in the book Conversations with Sathya Sai Baba with Dr. John Hislop, that is the first chapter, the first thing that Swami deals with. He says that where there is no time that is spent, there is no action that happens, kala, karana, kartavya, there is no reason, particular reason, you can't consider that as reality in a physical sense. So, in the state of a Chittakasha, that has its own realm of reality. So now he says, the senses are asleep, the mind is awake, that is Chittakasha. Now this entire Chittakasha is one dot in Chidakasha. So this is gross, Bhutakasha is gross, Chittakasha is subtle, and Chidakasha is causal. So he says, what is causal? And very beautifully Swami is explaining, he says, for example, when you sleep, you are having dreams. Okay. Then you go into deep sleep. Yeah, when you go into deep sleep, your body gets some rest. Your mind is also not active.
Yes.
Your mind is also at rest. But who is the enjoyer of that deep sleep? So he's asking, for whom is the deep sleep? Who is having the deep sleep?
Yes.
That entity which is enjoying the deep sleep is your true nature. So when he says that constant integrated awareness, it goes beyond all the three. It is like when somebody asked Nisargadatt Maharaj, for example, he is a realized soul who was in India, in Mumbai. So they asked him, their famous book called I Am That. So they asked him, he says, you also sleep. And all of us sleep. So what's the difference? He says, I am aware that I am sleeping. So that constant integrated awareness.
Yes.
So here is a, when you reach a level where you are aware that you are in deep sleep.
Yes.
So that is Chidakasa. Now coming back to joy and sorrow, how it is all interlinked.
Yes.
So the thing is, in my understanding, what Swami is saying is, anything that causes joy and sorrow is at the level of the body and the mind. So in the in your waking state, you have this, you have something that affects your body, so you get a hurt, or you get a hurt, so that is at the, you know, gross level, at the body level. Then somebody comes and scolds you, so that's at the mental level. You hear it, and then through the admin you start worrying. So everything is at the Bhutakasha and the Chittakasha levels. The moment you go to Chidakasha, which in which you are actually yourself.
I am I.
That I which you are in your Chidakasha is not affected by any of these.
Yes.
It is not affected by joy. It is not affected by sorrow.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yes.
So when I was reading this discourses, in it, I mean, it is so beautiful the way Swami has.
You know, in an earlier episode also, when we were discussing this, you know, of the Mandukya Upanishad and Keno Upanishad, you know, we said that our whole spiritual endeavor is to move that I from identifying with the body,
right,
and identifying with the mind to identifying with the core essence of what you are.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. In fact, there's a very humorous and very interesting story which Swami narrated in the 1990 series, Samukha. So Swami was telling that, you know, you should identify yourself with your true nature and all that. And he said, Oka chinna udaharanam, one small story.
Yes.
And he said, so there is this guru who tells his students, just keep chanting Shivoham, Shivoham, Shivoham. I am Shiva, I am Shiva, I am Shiva. And so the disciples, you know, blindly they started chanting, Shivoham, 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 they start chanting. So one fellow who was notorious, he went to the other student and he said, hello, you are chanting Shivoham, Shivoham. You know what the meaning is? He says, yeah, I know. What is the meaning? I am Shiva. I am Shiva, I am Shiva, I am Shiva. Then he says, if you are Shiva, what does Parvati become to you? He asks. Oh, papam, 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 papam. Please forgive me. Don't think like that. Don't think like that. Says, oh, maha papam, maha papam, maha papam. Means, oh, what such a great sin. What you're saying. So, Swami said, this is all half-baked. You are not convinced about what you're saying.
Yes.
So he says, if you are really convinced about what you're saying, if somebody asks, who is Parvati? You say, I am Parvati also.
I am Parvati also.
I am Shiva, I am Parvati, I am everything.
Yes,
I am everyone. But, you know, this is very nice when you try to analyze it, when you try to understand Gyatum, Drashtum, Praveshtum, you have to first know about it.
Yes.
Then you will have to start trying to, you know, follow it and be aware of that. But if you take the life of someone like Nisargadatt Maharaj again, because there is a ready example, who had that level of deep awakening and who was a realized soul. So, Mr. Suresh Rao, sir, from our radio side.
Yes.
He was narrating this incident. How does a realized soul actually live these principles in daily life? So when Mr. Suresh Rao, sir, from the radio side, like when he was a devotee, had not yet that, and there was no radio side, obviously, in, I think in the late 70s or early 80s.
Yeah, he was working in the Satya Seva organization, Maharashtra.
Yes, in Mumbai. So he went to Nisargadatt Maharaj, and he went there, and then he was sitting there on that day when somebody came and whispered something in his ears. And he just, he was in the middle of a conversation, and he said, I'll just be back. He went inside. And then after some 5-10 minutes, he came out and he continued talking. Later, they got to know that his wife had just passed away.
Oh, oh my God.
So he just went inside, saw her, and he told, oh, don't worry. And he just came back and continued talking.
Oh my God.
Means that conviction when a realized soul lives that conviction.
Yes.
I mean, so it's not that there is a deep sense of detachment from everything, not only from a family member or from it, but there is compassion to all.
Yes.
There is compassion to all. So that, you know, that feeling of all are mine.
Mm.
All are mine.
In fact, that's what here Swami says, if you have not developed detachment, it means that love has not bloomed in your heart.
Absolutely.
No, that is very interesting. You know, people, you will think that, you know, you're saying that if you want detachment, then develop love. It's contradictory.
Correct.
It seems like that. Correct. You know?
But that love which Swami is talking about is love of the true self, which is beyond.
It is beyond.
Chidakasha state. Just imagine.
Yes.
Are we aware of who we are in our deep sleep state? Are we aware?
Yes.
Is it possible for us to be aware of ourselves when we are in that deep sleep state? That is constant integrated awareness.
To be always centered on what who your real self is. In fact, Swami, in one of the discourses, gives this example of Jitendriya. I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
This prince who is called Jitendriya.
Right.
And he goes to the forest on an perhaps just for a outing. And so he meets this sannyasi there. And he introduces himself. I am Prince Jitendriya, and I am from the Jitendriya kingdom.
Yes.
The name is also Jitendriya.
Right.
And the sannyasi is very surprised and he says, wow, it's phenomenal. I mean, you're Jitendriya. I mean, one who has conquered the senses. And he says, you know, people many times have name as Dharmaraja, but they're not really anywhere near being an epitome of righteousness. So the sannyasi says, you know, let me test this man.
Correct.
And so he says, can we do something? You know, you're Jitendriya. So can we exchange clothes? Can I, you give me the prince robes and you don the robes of a sannyasi. So he says, no problem. So he gives, and so he takes the prince's clothes, the sannyasi, and what he does, he puts some red water on the garments, the prince's garments, and he goes to the kingdom. And the gatekeeper there stops him and he asks, who are you? And he says, you know who these garments are? These garments belong to the prince. The prince was in the jungle and the prince was actually attacked by wild animals and he's killed. Look at this thing. And you know, so this is a very serious matter. I have to go and report to the king. And the gatekeeper says, okay, one who is born has to die one day. One day or the other. Why are you
so perturbed?
So perturbed. You know? If you are born, birth and death come together. So you don't be so perturbed. It's okay. You can go into the kingdom. Go. And he was very shocked. I mean, seeing the gatekeeper was so cool about it. And then he says, no, I'll go to the king. And he goes to the king and he says, I'm very sorry to say. He starts crying. And the king asks, what happened? No, I have this very sorry news to give. You know, your son, your beloved son was attacked. And he is no more. He's dead. And the king says, sannyasi, you are a sannyasi. Why are you crying? You are a renunciant. This does not look nice on a renunciant to be so attached, you know, and be so worried about a simple thing like somebody has, you know, somebody has gone. It is like, you know, birds come in the night on the tree to rest. And once it is morning, you know,
They fly
away. So in the night, you have some relationship. He is my wife, he is my son, he is my daughter. But in the morning, they all go in their own ways. So it is like that. So he's gone. So, but you are a renunciant. You don't be like this.
King advises.
The king tells him. And now, the sannyasi thinks, this is very strange. You know, is everyone really like that? Let me go to the queen. The queen is a mother.
Finally, the mother should be at least.
Yeah, the mother should feel. So he goes to the mother and says, mother, I am, you know, I'm very sorry, but this is the truth. Your son is no more. He's dead. and this is how it all happened. And I know, I mean, as a mother, how painful it would be for you. But the mother says, but why are you so much in pain? You be a sannyasi.
Mm.
The mother says, see, in this world, the world is like a temporary inn.
Right.
It's a hotel. So each person comes, they stay there for some time. And once the time is up, they move on. So his time was up, he moved on. But you don't lose your focus. You be a sannyasi. And then the sannyasi thinks, okay, fine, you know, this is very strange. Maybe this king and queen are evolved, but the wife, wife is a beloved, you know, wife is life, as Swami says many times. People say, I'll go to the wife, and the wife, and he goes and says, you know, your beloved husband, your good husband, the husband whom you adored, the most righteous one, you know, this is what has happened to him, I'm very sorry to say. And the wife says, sannyasi, you know, when it rains, branches fall from the trees.
Many twigs fall down.
And for some time during the flow of the river, two twigs, they flow with each other. But after some time, you know, as the stream goes down and as they say, as water flows down the bridge, then the twigs separate. So that is what has happened. But why are you lamenting? It's okay. It's okay. And she says, you know, your sorrow is because of the attachment. The wife says. See, circumstances don't give us sorrow. What makes us sorrowful is our attachment to those circumstances.
Hari Om, that's it. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, this story is something.
It's really, you know, I remember as perhaps I've heard this story as a student, but at that point I never really grasped what Swami was trying to say. And okay, the story does not end there. So the sannyasi is really absolutely flabbergasted. I mean, really, it is a kingdom where everyone is a Jitendriya. You know, everyone is really
conscious. Then he goes to the people.
You know, then what happens? He comes back to the jungle. He comes back to the jungle and he says, now we'll tell the prince.
The whole kingdom is...
He says, the prince, you know, I had gone to your kingdom. Your father, mother, they're all captured. Your kingdom is captured. They have been taken as prisoners. Now your whole, you don't have anything there. You know, now you wake up, you immediately go wage a war because enemies have conquered. There is nothing there. You have to go save your parents. You have to go look after your wealth. You have to look after kingdom. You hurry up. And the prince says that when I came to this world, I didn't bring the kingdom with me. And when I go back, I will not be going back taking this kingdom with me.
Absolutely.
So, and why should I wage a war? War for what? This is not my kingdom. My kingdom is the kingdom of the Atma. Atma Samrajyam. Hridaya Samrajyam. For that kingdom, that is what is the most precious thing for me. And for that kingdom, I don't need to wage a war. For that kingdom, I have to only cultivate love. So that, if I have, that is enough.
That is more than enough. Amazing. In fact, the other two attributes which Swami mentions in the first paragraph, then he says, without any worry about one's own satisfaction, he will engage himself in sadhana firmly, uninterruptedly and with conviction. So, in order to reach that state of exalted detachment, which with attachment only to the Atma,
yes,
or to the Lord, he says, you have to start. You have to start somewhere. And several of the shlokas in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where which is the Bhakti Yoga, there are several shlokas where Lord Krishna says, Yo mat bhakta same priya, that particular devotee is close to me. And there are many qualities of the devotee that Lord Krishna, enunciates in those shlokas. And if you look at these two lines, what Swami says, there is, he says, without worrying about one's own satisfaction, and sadhana should be done firmly, uninterruptedly, with conviction. Santushtam satatam yogi yatatman dridanishchayaha.
Yes.
Dridanishchayaha is that determination and that courage. You should have that courage to pursue the sadhana that you're doing. And he says, santushta sadatam yogi. Means one who is always, you know, contented. Here he says, without worrying about one's own satisfaction, but he is contented because he is doing everything for the Lord.
Yes.
Is offering everything to the Lord. Santushta satatam yogi is contented in his own actions because he is offering everything to the Lord. And yatatman dhrida nishchaya. Now Swami says, dhrida nishchaya is like courage. And he says, that courage can be used for several things. He says, some people are very courageous in doing mountaineering. Some people want to cross the ocean. Some people want to cross the forest. Some people want to, you know, are very courageous in sports. Some people are courageous in putting others to problem, in harming others, whatever. He says that courage, that courage can be used in different ways. But those who choose to use it to find God, they will have this...
That is the greatest adventure.
That is the greatest... they will be fearless. That courage. And then he gives very nicely. He says, santushta sadatam yogi means, he says, there is difference between tripti and santripti. See, you know, we are saying contented. Tripti and santripti. Gita and sangeeta. He says, kirtana and sankirtana.
Oh, wow.
He says, Gita is, yes, worldly music. Sangeeta is, you know, Nivritti Marga is that which is connected.
Gita with sattvicness.
Yes, which is connected to the Atman. So everything, he says, tripti and santripti. Santripti is which is connected to the Atma, which is connected to the spiritual path.
Salokya Sayujya.
Yes.
Samipya.
So he says that path of spirituality, that Nivritti Marga, which if a devotee wants to take up that with dhrida nishchayaha, with that firm determination, then he will start going and he will start getting that understanding. So once you have that complete understanding, only then you will have full contentment. So that is what he says. After understanding the reality, he will have full contentment.
Full contentment.
So it's like a step-by-step process. And of course, it's always that full contentment, he says, is the ultimate step which you will reach after you start with worship of the Lord with the form, and slowly you start going, and you know that Sakara worship, you start worshipping the Lord with the form, and then once you reach a level when you understand that that same God is the Atman, is present everywhere, then you can start kind of comprehending what that Nirakara is. Because it is beyond the comprehension of the senses and the mind. Just like you are in that Chidakash state, you are in the deep sleep state. That awareness is beyond the is beyond the grasp of the senses and the mind. So your senses cannot comprehend what that awareness is. Neither can your mind comprehend what that awareness is. That awareness is spontaneous. It is there. And I think when you reach that state, Swami says, then you can think of the Lord as a Nirakara, as the formless, omnipresent, omniscient Lord. But till then, you go with the form of the Lord. And he says, some people may say, oh, I see everything. Even this is also God. Another person is also God. But he says that is also having a form. That is also Bhutakasha. You know, I mean, the moment it's having form, it's having this thing, reality, that is Bhutakasha. There's nothing wrong. You start there, slowly you internalize and go. Then you can be called a bhakta.
That awareness, you know, what you are mentioning. So Swami says, ultimately, we are already that. Only thing that has to be done is, it has to be uncovered. Because, you know, we are that I am a, that Chidakasha state.
Right.
We are truly that. What has to be done is only uncovering of... and Swami says that whole process of uncovering is what is removing ego and attachment.
Absolutely. So, it's like... see, if you say ego and attachment, it should not... It's not like, you know, I give up my family. I give up my See, Swami never
absolutely
never wanted that, you know, okay, I'm not attached to my family, I leave and go to Swami
absolutely.
To narrate that beautiful story of how yes. a person left everything and went to the bank of the river Ganga.
Yes.
And then every day he would meditate on a rock, and one day he came and he saw somebody else sitting on that rock. And he said, hello, that's my rock. And that person said, you have left your entire family and you got attached to this rock.
No, in fact, you know, Sai Prakash, when I read this Jitendriya story of Bhagwan, you know, the thought that came to me was, you know, here, but Swami is giving a different advice in the sense that, you know, this man, he simply said that, you know, I want Hriday Samrajya, and he didn't do his, you know, what about his responsibilities? That thought came in mind.
Okay.
And you won't believe it.
Mm.
The next thing in the discourse, Swami is saying that everybody has roles to play. And Swami says that you have to do all your roles to perfection. That is what is dharma.
Correct.
And then Swami gives his example of this actor who goes to the king.
Yes.
And he is dressed up as Shankaracharya.
Yes.
And then, you know, he propounds on the philosophy, Advaita philosophy of Shankaracharya, and he says, Mata nasti, Pita nasti, nasti bandhu, Sahodara, Artham nasti, Groham nasti, Tasma jagrata jagrata, and he goes on, Janma dukkham, Jara dukkham, Jaya dukkham, Puna punaha, Antakale mahadukkham, Tasma jagrata jagrata. So the king is very impressed with the exposition of Shankaracharya philosophy, and the king wants to reward him, and the king offers to give him a plate of gold coins, and this man says, I cannot accept all this.
Chala santosham, keep it.
Please keep it. Just like Swami. So he, and the king is really surprised.
Right.
And king asks, he says, no, I am, you know, I'm in the garb of Adi Shankara, you know.
So I cannot accept.
Mm. And the king says, okay, fine. And the next day he comes, the same actor, now he comes as a dancer.
Right.
And he does an excellent performance.
Mm.
And the king is very happy, and king again gives a plate of some gifts, but probably not that many gold coins, because anyway he was not interested. So they gave him a few gold coins, and this man again is displeased. And the king, what happened? Why are you, what's the problem? He says, no, this is not enough. So give me more. What is this? The minister is surprised. Yesterday we were giving you full plate. You said no. Today you are asking for more. He said, yesterday I was a renunciant. In that role, I was doing that role to perfection. But today I am a dancer. And as a dancer, you know, the dancer lives. This is his livelihood. So doing this role to perfection. So Swami gave this example just to say that, you know, you can't. As you are very rightly said, that you can't leave everything and say that I don't have anything to do. Whatever role has begun, I think that is the message of, you know, Gita also.
To
Arjuna.
That's what yes. Swami said. This is a drama.
Mm.
You have to do your role.
Mm.
Be aware that you're doing a role.
Yes.
Be aware.
But do it with perfection so that you get better roles.
That's why he says, no, name parthasti kartavyam trishulokeshu kinchana nana vaptam avaptavyam vartaye vacha karmani. Where Krishna says, I am not bound by any duty in all the three worlds. I don't have to do anything. I can just come and, you know, just chill out. See, just like Bhagwan,
yes.
Bhagwan, Swami need not have done anything. Swami yes. said, I am God, I am Bhagwan, I am sitting
yes.
in a place. All of you come, you can have my darshan, I am sitting there. If he wanted, he could have done that.
As Swami says, Ramayana, Rama could have just told Ravana, die. Sita, come.
Exactly. In one instant, it will all be done. But he says, I take on these activities, I do this activity, so that foolish people do not, the next shloka says, so that foolish people do not follow blindly this. So I have
only to show us,
yes,
demonstrate to us.
Yes. So he demonstrates and he says, this is love without duty.
Mm. Wow.
Which is divine.
Wow.
Duty with love is desirable. Duty without love is deplorable.
Yes.
Love without duty is divine.
Divine.
So he says this is just love. And the most, I would say, the most powerful expression of that selfless love is compassion.
Absolutely.
And Swami says in the second paragraph, talks about compassion. And you know, I was seeing this documentary edited by us only. The Eternal Dissolves into Eternity.
Mm.
You know, that's the documentary of Swami's Mahasamadhi.
Yes.
And somebody had sent a link this morning on WhatsApp. So I think it's on YouTube. So I was just seeing it. It just brought just tears to my eyes because, you know, when you look through that documentary, you realize what Bhagwan has done. You know, his every darshan was compassion. His every smile was a compassion on humanity. His, you know, everything he gave, discourses, he served, he sang, he played with us, he did this, he did that. He need not have done anything. It was just pure compassion that he had. And so here is Bhagawan who is just doing everything with compassion. So a person, once they reach that stage.
That is love all.
That is love all, serve all.
Yes.
Where there is absolute compassion. Because there's no difference.
And Swami says, once you develop that kind of love, detachment will happen automatically. You don't have to, you know, people ask how to get detached. We cannot really get detached from the world. Yeah? We have so many things, you know, responsibilities, families. So the best way, Swami says, is easiest way, you love God more. If you love God more and more and more, automatically detachment will happen more and more and more.
Yeah, it is. It's rather a simplified statement, but
but loving life, God is
like, you remember a couple of episodes back, one of the listeners had asked, "How do I love my boss, or how do I love somebody who is always trying to corner me, or has a lot of hatred towards me?" It is, I think, like, you know, Swami would say that when you put a seed. When the seed sprouts into a small sapling, you need a fence around it.
Yes.
But once the seed sprouts and once you get the gigantic tree, then everybody takes shelter. The same animals which would have destroyed it come and take shelter under the tree.
Yes.
Under the same. So, in the same way, you know, initially when people are trying to follow the spiritual path.
Yes.
So you'll have to have that sadhana. You'll have to be cautious. You'll have to be very careful.
Yes.
But slowly, once you are firmly convinced about what you're doing, then I think it has such a rub off on everybody who comes to you. That anybody comes to you, they cannot but love you.
Yeah.
The same, you will trigger that same love in the others. When you're so full of that realization, I think only love will come out from the others as well.
Wow. Phenomenal. As Swami says, you know, such a person, nothing can stick to him other than bliss.
Exactly.
Only bliss. I mean, Swami says, in them, you can see nothing other than the sweetness of bliss, nor can anything else stick to them.
Absolutely. They are in that constant state of bliss. In fact, this was an advice which one of Swami's very great devotees, Mr. Raja Reddy, the singer who used to sing in Mandir.
Nearly for more than 25 years,
he
served Bhagwan at close quarters.
He served Bhagwan, and then so he was telling me once, I was asking, he said, see, Prema Swarupa, everybody says Swami is embodiment of love. And you see it all the time. Swami is always giving love, you know, giving, sharing, giving his time, giving everything. But he is also Ananda Swarupa, he is embodiment of bliss. And he says, if you taste a fraction of what bliss he actually is. He says, that's it. Nothing else in this world will interest you at all. You will be in that bliss. Then I said, how do you taste that? Of course, his path was the path of meditation. And he said that through meditation, when you constantly contemplate on Swami, and when you are able to visualize his form in your mind. You chant his name and see his form. That's all meditation is.
Brahmavit. Brahmavit.
That's all. You keep seeing his form. He says, I've been doing it for 30 years.
Wow.
And
amazing.
This is exactly what Bhagwan told me to do. And I'm doing that. And he says, I just sit, close my eyes, start chanting Swami's name and start seeing his form in my mind's eye. And I just do only that. That is my meditation. And he says, I don't know how to tell you that bliss which I experience. Now forget reaching Swami's level of Ananda. We wanted to reach his level. But that comes with years of sadhana. And so he said that once you are in that state of bliss, automatically you will get a fraction of...
I mean, this whole thing of... automatically it happens that you'll see the world as ephemeral. You'll see the world as nothing. I mean, the worldly joys and the worldly sort of attachments, they won't stick to you only.
No, they won't stick to you, but at the same time, see, it's not like... You see, the perfect example again is Bhagwan. Now, Swami was here and the Gujarat earthquake happened. Swami said, if Swami had said that after all it is their karma, they have to go through, I am not attached to them, I am not attached. No, he didn't do that. He had to play the role. He had to, with heart oozing with compassion, he immediately sent trucks from here, Orissa floods. When it happened, immediately Swami said, no, let us construct houses for them. People have lost their houses. So, you know, that spontaneity, that spontaneity is also an expression of the feeling that they are parulu parulu kadu, parulu paramatmade. See, others are not others, they are Bhagwan himself. So, you know, when Bhagwan sees himself in everybody, that is the state of compassion. Which, you know, whatever this body can do, to how much ever extent it can do, it will keep doing.
Absolutely. And I think that is what the one important thing Swami says, isn't it? Such a devotee, Swami says, will be eternally engaged in service, ever engaged in service.
Exactly.
Of fellow men.
Right.
Hearts full of compassion and ever engaged in service. Wow. It's really amazing. I mean, we have to just only look at Swami's life. He's Prema Sarupa. To understand Prema Vahini, just look at the life of Bhagwan, who in every second of his life lived this message. You know, many times you feel time is so short, but actually probably we are not making use of whatever time we have got. I mean, just one Vahini has so much of nectar, and so much Swami has given every discourse and every literature that he has given, and we are still trying to understand. We have to go and spend more time, as Swami says, in inquiry and then experience. Right. And I think that is the journey for all of us, and we have to help each other in this endeavor, because satsang definitely helps us a lot, spurs us on this path and gives us that motivation and the courage to walk on this path. So dear listeners, we're very happy that we are continuing this satsang, and please do share your thoughts and comments. And if you would like any change in this program or any question to that you want us to take up in this discussion, we are doing chapter 19 of Prema Vahini, if you are referring to the English version, and in Telugu it is chapter 6. So please do turn the pages of these beautiful volumes and let the prema that oozes from here touch our lives and transform us, where we one day become that prema sarupa. Thank you so much. Sairam.